out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we are celebrating our third anniversary of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. This podcast started on July 5th, 2017. I wasn't sure how long it would go. I thought we would actually run out of interviews or people to interview after 1 year. But here we are celebrating our third anniversary. So thank you to all of you out there who listen to us every week. I know our audience has grown quite a lot, judging by my emails and judging by the downloads. So I appreciate all your support. I get a lot of emails from you guys. I get a lot of support from you guys. So thank you again for listening. And I want to thank all of our guests who have joined us over these last 3 years. So what I've done the last couple years on our anniversary show is I kind of put together a compilation of interviews, some of my favorite interviews for the last 2 years or 3 years. What I'm doing this year is something a little different. We just interviewed John Little the last couple weeks, and John talked about Mike Mentzer a lot. And one of the things John said to me at the beginning of our interview was he had listened to a lot of my interviews with the bodybuilders who competed in the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to put all those interviews together where we all talked about the 1980 Mr. Olympia? So today, we are going to be talking to about seven bodybuilders who were competing in the Mr. Olympia in 1980. This is 40 years later, and it's still the most controversial and most talked about Mr. Olympia ever. This, of course, was the Mr. Olympia where Arnold Schwarzenegger came back, and he won the contest. He did not announce that he was competing in the show. Most of the competitors did not know he was going in the show until the night before the contest, when Arnold just showed up at the competitors' meeting. Supposedly, Arnold only trained for 8 weeks for that contest, and he was doing it for several reasons. He said he just did it because he wanted to do it. Some people speculate that he did it to promote his movie Conan the Barbarian, which started filming the next year. Some people speculate that he was doing it as a favor to Paul Graham, who was the promoter of the contest, because Arnold and Paul Graham go way back. There's several reasons why people think Arnold did it, but it's really controversial because Arnold was not in his best shape. Some people said he was 70% as good as he used to look. Some people said 80%. And the guys he was competing against, who included Chris Dickerson, Frank Zane, Boyer Coe, Mike Mentzer, and several others, were all in their best shape of their life. Well, some of them were in the best shape of their life. But all these guys had trained all year for this one contest, and they thought it was very unfair that Arnold could just sneak into the show, have most of his friends on the judging panel, and he could win the contest at not his best when these other bodybuilders had trained so hard. So we've done several interviews with lots of bodybuilders who were in that show over the years, including Chris Dickerson, who was in second place. We interviewed Frank Zane this year, who was in third place in that contest. Frank was the reigning Mr. Olympia going into 1980. He had won the Olympia 3 times. We interviewed Boyer Coe, who was in fourth place. Mike Mentzer was in fifth place, of course. He's passed away. But we interviewed Roger Walker, who was in sixth place. We interviewed Roy Callender, who was in seventh place. I also interviewed Samir Banut, who was competing in his first Mr. Olympia. Samir went on to win the Olympia 3 years later in 1983. And I also interviewed Roy Duvall, who was also competing in his first Mr. Olympia, and he was standing right next to Arnold. So we've got some great interviews with seven world-class bodybuilders coming up on this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this. Of course, we're not going to play the full interview. We're just going to play the part where we talk to these bodybuilders about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So that's going to be coming up in a minute. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff who will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your first order. All right. And as I mentioned, that interview we did with John Little over the last 2 weeks, John is an author, and he's also used to write for Flex Magazine. And he is a big Mike Mentzer expert, because John was friends with Mike for over 20 years before Mike passed away. So he wrote several books about Mike Mentzer. And John's also an expert about Bruce Lee, and he wrote several books about Bruce Lee. And he even produced some videos about Bruce. So we did some interviews with John the last 2 weeks, and they got some really great feedback. A lot of people really liked him. So I'm going to read some of those responses we got right now. First of all, I want to read some emails I got. If you guys want to email me directly, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And I will read your emails on the air. If you have any thoughts about the show, or who you want to see on the show, or who you want to see interviewed, just feel free to email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, this first email we got is from Steven, and he says, "Hi, John, I hope you and your family enjoyed the holiday weekend. I just found out that I have multiple great condition Ironman magazines from 1959, from the 60s also. I grew up reading the Weider publications, Muscle and Fitness and Flex. My gym teacher, football coach, Mr. Mantle, had a subscription to Ironman. I always remembered the yellow cover of the old Ironman mags. Interesting, the vast differences between the old Ironman magazines and the old Muscle and Fitness magazines. Weider publications seemed to sell us on a dream lifestyle, while Perry Rader seemed more aligned with education surrounding health and weight training, specifically surrounding bodybuilding. Just an old fan's observation. I just re-listened to the Frank Zane podcast. Then I was looking through an Ironman from the mid-1960s, and there was Frank. An article about him showed a chemistry lab coat, amongst other black and white pics, of Frank lifting old school iron. The most recent podcasts with John Little were outstanding. I worked for a few years as a fitness instructor at a Courts Royal Fitness Club. They had a great full collection of old Nautilus machines, in addition to a full gym of free weights and machines. Fun times for a bodybuilding fan and a weight training enthusiast. Hearing John talk about Mike Mentzer and Arthur Jones was awesome. I have John Little's Bruce Lee, The Art of Expressing the Human Body book. I also thoroughly enjoyed his book. So hearing John speak on the podcast was great fun. Keep up the great work with your podcast and lifting. Thank you, Stephen." All right. Thank you, Stephen. And Stephen actually sent me that article he was talking about from Frank Zane. So maybe I can read that one day. It was really cool seeing it, because this was Frank from the early 60s. And he was teaching school. I don't know if that was in California or if he was still in Tampa, Florida. This one came from Mark Martinez, I believe. I said, "John, great podcast with John Little. His views on the 1980 Olympia were spot on. As a member of World's Gym, seeing Arnold train before the show and the feeling inside the gym in the aftermath, plus the people I knew and spoke to, the damage done to the enterprise of bodybuilding when it was riding the high off the wave of pumping iron a few years earlier was irreparable. For those who saw its ascension and its fall from grace, see how damaging the 1980 and 81 Olympias were. As for your frustrations with garnering views, as I can relate, I think the views and the takes on the 1980 Olympia are a perfect example. People of a certain age who have no knowledge, nor respect, or curiosity for historical context are going to believe what they want to, and with no intellectual curiosity for broadening their understanding. They just click from one bro science or training video to the next. Their loss. Mark Martinez." All right. Thank you, Mark. We got a couple also comments on our Apple podcast reviews. So if you listen to our podcast on Apple, on your iPhone, go to Apple Podcast under Bodybuilding Legends, and you can leave us a review and you can rate the show. So if you like the show, give us 5 stars and please leave a review. I think the more reviews we get, the better. This one came from Australia, but I can't read the name. just a bunch of letters here. But it came from Australia. It was sent on June 23rd. He says, awesome John Little interview on Mike Mentzer. Hi, John. Regarding some anecdotes I recall reading on forums, supposedly Mentzer smoked crack during his workouts. Who knows the validity of such claims? Also, during the insane years around 1985, he was caught directing traffic naked. Although I highly revere Mentzer as the hypothesis of bodybuilding at its aesthetic supreme, such anecdotes I nevertheless find enticing to consider regarding his psychological breakdown. Mike read and valued Nitschke. His life ironically ended similarly to Nitschke's. Insane by the age of 44, fundamentally his passing on June 10th, 2001 was an unfortunate loss for the sport. I don't know if he did crack, but I know Mike was doing a lot of speed even when he was competing. And I think that might have had some problems, but I know he was supposedly doing other drugs, maybe drinking, I don't know, when he had got later in life before he died. So it's a shame his life ended like that. We also got a podcast review from Great Britain, and this was sent on June 22nd. He said, great part one with John Little. I've been a fan of his since his articles appeared in the UK Flex in the late 1980s. All right. So thank you guys for sending in those reviews on Apple Podcasts and also for emailing me your reviews. All right, and I posted a video up from part two of our interview with John Little, which I was able to include some great clips from Bruce Lee and some great pictures of Mike Mentzer and Bruce Lee. So if you're on YouTube, check out my YouTube channel at John Hansen. Be sure to subscribe to that because I'm trying to put all our podcasts up on YouTube as well. So got a lot of comments on this, and I got a lot of views on this video as well. Matt Day said, how refreshing to hear conversation around training rather than drugs. Loran Shoham said, oh, the psychic part is just an acting technique that gets you hyper-focused on the question of someone else. It's not even that hard to learn. Ivan Gordano said, thank you for honoring Mike Mentzer's legacy, John Hansen and John Little. Great interview as always, John. Paul Perez said, thank you, John. Great interview with John Little. Mike Mentzer and Bruce Lee were heroes of mine as a teenager. The 1980 and 1981 Mr. Olympia contest changed my fandom for the sport. I stopped buying the magazines and I didn't follow the sport anymore. John, if you're planning on having John Little on again, would you mind asking him about Steve Reeves? Because he also co-wrote a book about Steve Reeves and also did a documentary on Steve Reeves. That'll be awesome. All the best, John. You're the best. I love your channel. T Fitness said he used the term conservation of energy phenomenon. Paul Check uses the term unaccustomed stimulus, and it's the same science. More energy and more musculoskeletal stability is engaged when you try new exercises for your body. The Spritz said, funny that Mike, being so incredibly intelligent, would think he could just tell Ben and Joe that he wasn't going to participate and get away with it. Brian Blindstrip said, great interview, John. Gary Tubbs said, great interview. Alik Shehan said, wow, I have a few of John Little's books in my library. Osam said, amazing interview. Jessup Fancy Pants said, a few weeks ago, I had my girlfriend look at a few pictures of the 80 Olympia, her not knowing anything about bodybuilding, anything about posing, the competitors. She picked Mentzer every time. That shows who simply was the better competitor that day. That's interesting. Charles DiManio said, John Little, great interview. Two great legends, Mike Mentzer and Bruce Lee. Great job. Liren said, I think Ed Wong said that Tammy Tom has comparable speed to Lee on the straight lead punch. Stefano said, bodybuilding is a business just like everything else. The irony is that in allowing the 1980 debacle to occur so that more profit can be made, bodybuilding lost so much credibility, which inevitably would hurt profits. Imagine if bodybuilding became as popular as wrestling, how profitable it would have been. Then again, $200 million ain't bad for a couple of brothers that started a magazine in a time about a subject that 99% of people didn't even know existed. Still, if bodybuilding had stuck to the Frank Zane type of physiques from the late 70s and the judging was fair, who knows how popular bodybuilding would have been before the internet. Great interview. I remember the name John Little from the mags in the old days. Great to know how Bruce was buying the bodybuilding magazines and how it influenced him. Who knows, without bodybuilding, maybe Bruce Lee would have remained anonymous. Let's face it, Bruce's body was very important to his overall fame and popularity. If he had never lifted weights, what would he have looked like? It wouldn't be the same without the incredible muscularity he possessed. Shaq said, one of the best interviews on YouTube. Jetty said, it's very rare that I watch an interview like this and I don't get bored. This is a great interview. I didn't want it to end. Rezzo said, this episode is great. I got another comment that said, great video. Mike and Bruce were my heroes. We got one negative comment. This guy says, hey, sorry to break it to you guys. Bruce Lee was a fraud. I loved him so much, but he backed down every opportunity to fight. Everyone backed up his lies. It's short for sensei is always the right syndrome. Once you leave your first gym, you realize real quick if what you learn was real or not. I learned judo before I became a pro champion MMA fighter, and I quickly learned he couldn't fight anyone that had any skill. Bruce Lee backed down the opportunity to prove himself over a dozen times. Judo Gene LaBelle said he was folding him up and lifting him above his head with ease. So for Bruce to fight a judo guy, he would get submitted easily. I wish I could say Bruce Lee could be a pro fighter. He just didn't have enough in his arsenal at the time of his death. Travis said the Bee Water documentary on ESPN was the worst Bruce Lee documentary I've ever seen. D-Ball said, overall, not too bad of an interview with John Little, but I think a big opportunity was missed to discuss the difficult late 80s for Mike, and then when he reappeared as a personal trainer in the 90s. I also would have loved to hear more about Mike's extremely low-volume routines that he gave out late in his life. I also don't get why all these bodybuilders are so obsessed with Bruce Lee. Old Coach said, excellent again. It's incredible how the outcome of the 80 Olympia was such a pivotal moment in bodybuilding. I remember watching previous bodybuilding competitions on TV in the late 70s, and then it came to a screeching halt. Totally disappeared because of that one event. Sad to think what could have been. Samuel Clemens said, Mike was too smart for his own good. Dogmatic, he couldn't change, much to his undoing. His last few years were very sad to see. He was absolutely correct about overtraining, though. And Stephen Roberts said, what he doesn't say about Bruce Lee is that the weight training was a small part of an overall high-volume training regime of sparring, running, cycling, weights, isometric contractions, work, as well as focused training on his forearms with home using an almost grease-the-groove approach, keeping dumbbells close by and Zottman curling throughout the day as an example, and high-frequency ab training. So it's a bit misleading to say the abbreviated weights aspect was what led to Bruce Lee's physique. All right, so that was our comments on our YouTube page. And like I said, check out my YouTube page because I'm going to try and put all our videos from our podcast up there as well. All right, what else we got going on? I hope you guys are safe out there with this coronavirus going on. I heard it's getting a lot worse. I know it's getting worse out here in Florida. I work at a hospital doing security, and we are jammed with people coming in getting coronavirus testing. So I hope everybody is safe out there. We are in the third week of our fitness challenge. The John Hansen Summer Fitness Challenge started on June 15th. So now we are in our third week, and I am keeping in touch with all of the competitors who joined, or all the people who joined, and everybody's doing really good. Some people are really making some great progress. We've got Charles Gaines, the author of Pumping Iron. He is starting up tomorrow. He was out on vacation for a while, but Charles is in great shape for a guy in his late 70s. He sent me his before pictures today, and he looks fantastic. So Charles wants to add a little more muscle, so I'm really excited to be working with him. Happy 4th of July. That was this weekend. Hope you guys were able to enjoy it. I guess most people just stayed inside because of the coronavirus. But 4th of July was actually Sergio Oliva's birthday, supposedly, if Sergio has the right birthday. I know he was born in Cuba, and sometimes they don't keep track of when they were actually born. But I think Sergio was born in 1940, so if he would still been alive today, he would be 80 years old. So we'll always remember Sergio on his birthday. I've got some interviews I'm working on. Jim Haislop, 1968 AAU Mr. America, one of the most popular Mr. Americas. He lives right out here in Tampa. I met Jim a couple of years ago, and Jim has agreed finally to do an interview. So he wants to do it in person, so I'm going to have to go to his house with a camera, and we can't do it over Zoom or Skype like we usually do, or even over the phone. So I'm going to try and arrange that in the next week or two and get over to Jim's house and see if we can do that interview. I know a lot of people are going to be interested in that. I'm still trying to get Rick Wayne. I'm still working on him. He says he wants to do it, but he just hasn't given me a day yet, but I'll keep trying. And I noticed Muhammad McAway is now on social media a lot. He's on Instagram and he's even on Facebook. So I asked him if he wanted to be on the show. He did not respond. But I'll keep trying. That would be great to have Muhammad McAway. It seems like he's was really never on social media before, but he's out there now, and he's really promoting stuff. I know he's putting a lot of old pictures up. So maybe he'll be interested in talking about his career in bodybuilding with the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I'm trying to do a Zoom interview with Samir Banood and Roy Callender. Listening to these old interviews today for today's show about the 1980 Olympia, I realize I haven't talked to Samir or Roy for years. So I'd like to get both of those guys on the show. They're both great personalities. And maybe we can get them on talking about their universe victories and their Mr. Olympia competitions. I think it'd be a great interview having them both on at once. So I'm going to be working on that as well. And next week we got Gerard Dante. We were supposed to do that interview this week, but I thought we'd celebrate the third anniversary with this 1980 Mr. Olympia collection of interviews. All right. All right. If you're ready for this, let's bring it on. These are our interviews we did with seven different bodybuilders. So we got Chris Dickerson, Frank Zane, Boyer Coe, Roger Walker, Roy Duvall, Samir Banood, and Frank Zane. And we got them all coming up right now. And we're talking about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. Here we go. All right, we're going to start our Mr. Olympia interviews from 1980 with the great Boyer Coe, five-time Mr. Universe, Mr. World. And Boyer's always been one of my favorite interviews because he's very articulate, he's got great stories, and he's very honest. So here's the clip of me and Boyer talking about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So let's go to the 1980 Mr. Olympia now. This was the big controversial Olympia. I know you and I have talked a little bit about this by email. And now it's like 35 years later, and this is still probably the most controversial, one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias ever. Did you know that Arnold was going to compete in that show before the contest?
You know what? If I'd have been smart, I would have realized. But I was a dummy. I didn't. You know, I was so... Let's back up to the first Miss Olympia contest.
Right.
Was in 1980 in Philadelphia. George Snyder put it on. Okay. So this is shortly before the Mr. Olympia, and you had myself, Frank Zane, Mike Mincer, and I think Ron Tufel, guest hosts. Okay, so we're all in good shape. And that was right after Frank had had his accident.
Yeah.
So he was lacking, okay? Because he'd been in a hospital for about 10 days. He had lost a lot of weight. And Arnold was there, and we had a trade show. You know, it had supplement companies. I was with Bodymaster, so we had our equipment on display there. And I recall Arnold, it was so important for Arnold not to miss a workout that he was down there working out in the area where we had the trade show. And he had a film crew following him around. I never paid any attention to it. So I just totally dismissed it. And then I remember George Snyder, because I did a lot of business with George Snyder. He had Olympus Health Clubs at the time, and right. He was franchising. We sold a ton of equipment to those guys. So I was on the phone with George almost every day. And he's saying, you know, he says, I know who's going to win the Mr. Olympia. He said, I got it written down, and I got it on a piece of paper locked in my safe. I said, well, that's good. I'm amazed that you know who's going to win. Never thought about it. But you got to remember, they had, in those days, they had a thing called the association. It was Arnold, George Snyder, Franco Colombo, and Bill Drake. Okay. But I'm not, you know, maybe I'm just naive in those days. Never paid any attention.
What was the association, Bart?
Well, in other words, what they did, they formed an association where you got a discount on supplements, gym equipment, and clothes, sports clothing and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then they would get a piece of it. So, I mean, I sold them a lot of equipment at a discount, and they in turn, you know, turned me on to customers. And I'm sure that the supplement companies and on down the line did the same thing. But to answer your question, I didn't realize that Arnold was going to enter the Mr. Olympia until the night before, because Bill Pearl called me. Told me, said, I just want to let you know Arnold's going to enter the contest. I said, well, yeah, okay. You know, and then, and I know this has been discussed a million times, and people argue about it, and you're right, it's over 30 years old. I don't know why people continue to argue about it, and their opinions are very strong, but you got to remember, opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one,
right,
you know?
Right.
But and most of the people that want to argue about it so energetically weren't even born in 1980. You know, but the thing is this. I remember sitting back there at the prejudging, and Mike Mincer and I are sitting there talking, and we see Arnold, and the best way I can describe it, he looks thin. And I even remember telling Mike, I said, you know, I don't know why Arnold's doing it. This is a shame. He's going to lose. You know, why ruin his risk his reputation? This is, everybody had high regard for him. Well, as it, you know, fast forward as it turns out, Arnold won. And everybody makes big deals about Mike and Arnold get, you know, almost having coming to blows at the prejudging meeting. The thing was how it all got started, and I'm sure you've heard it.
Yeah.
We had all agreed the year before there would be no height classes. No, it's an open contest.
Yeah, no under 200, over 200.
Yeah, and I explained that to Ben Weeder, and he says, you know, you're absolutely right. We just got to have one. So we get there. Arnold says, no, we want two classes. So whatever amount of people they had in the contest, maybe they said they had 17 people in the contest. So we all voted ahead of time. 16 people said, no, we want it open. Arnold wanted two classes. So trying to be a diplomat, I stood up and I said, okay, Arnold, we're going to give you the floor. Explain to us why you think it's going to be, you want two classes. What's the reason? And instead of saying, okay, well, boy, this is my reason, he says, well, why don't you talk like a man? And I'm thinking, well, hell, I've given you an opportunity to say something. And that's when Mike blew up. I guess he had gotten tired of it. He jumps in there. And it probably would have come to blows because Mike was pretty mad. Mm-hmm. Had Bill Pearl not stepped between Mike and Arnold, all hell would have broke loose. And the way Arnold was sitting, and if Mike would have hit him, it would have taken Arnold's head off because he was right over him, and Arnold was just sitting down with his hands. But, I mean, as it turned out, everybody, I will think this, in retrospect, if Arnold had to do it over again, he wouldn't have done it because it cost him a lot of friendships. And it definitely colored his reputation. Mm-hmm. Maybe not quite as mad as the thing having an illegitimate kid with the maid, but nevertheless, you know, it put him down a much lower notch in the guys that had always held him in high regard.
What did Arnold say to Mincer to get him so mad? Where Mincer came walking over to him.
Well, he gets off the subject. He says, "Well, everybody knows why you didn't win last year." He says, "Your gut's too big," and that's when it really got started.
Okay.
I think if I remember correctly, Mike might even cocked his arm back. He was ready to punch him.
Really?
That's when Bill Pearl stepped between.
So Bill Pearl was the one that stepped in and stopped it.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Pearl was, and then after Ben Weeder saw that it was safe, and he jumped in and tried to. he was very careful not to get in between Mike and Arnold right away.
Until the time he was right.
Yeah, exactly.
So going through the prejudging of that show, then did you feel like Arnold? You said he wasn't at his best. Did you feel like he had a chance to win? Who did you think was going to win the show?
Well, it's interesting. And only I can offer you an opinion.
Yeah.
I would say this. Once again, I thought Chris looked good, and Chris obviously came out second.
Yeah.
But I never picked Chris as the winner. I don't know why. Frank was in good shape. He had improved a lot since 2 weeks ago at the Miss Olympia, but he was still a little thin. I thought Mike was in excellent shape. And I was in excellent shape at the, so I don't think anybody, I can't recall Mike or anybody else saying, I should have won the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
But everybody was in agreement that Arnold shouldn't have won.
Right, right.
If I would have been a judge, I would have had Arnold probably somewhere around sixth or seventh place.
I wanted to ask you, Blair, about going back to 1980. Some people may not know this, but CBS Television was there to film the show as back then in the late 1970s, ABC Wide World of Sports was usually filming the Mr. Olympia, and then NBC and CBS got involved, and then CBS was there filming it in 1980. And then that footage was never used. And you did get to see that footage, though, didn't you?
I did. There was only four people that I recall saw that footage. This is what happened. Prior to the Mr. Olympia, CBS sent a film crew and spent 2 days with who they assumed might be the top competitors. They spent 2 days with Mike Mentzer, 2 days with Dennis Tenorino, 2 days with me, and there might have been 2 days with Chris Dickerson. I'm not quite sure. So that film crew, I knew they had been to my home, spent a whole day with me, and then that same film crew went over to Sydney to film the contest. And I, the God, let me think of the guy's name. I'll remember the guy that was there. Well, his name will come to me in a minute. But he was there, and he called me in Sydney after the contest, and he says, "I'd like to have a meeting with you and Frank and Dennis and a couple of other people." He said, "You know, we're never going to be able to show this on TV." He said, "It's just too controversial." So, you know, I said, "Okay, you know, that's just the way, that's the end of it."
Now, why did he say that, Blair? Why did he say it was too controversial?
Because it was obvious to him that Arnold didn't deserve to win, and they didn't want to put something so controversial, even to the average person sitting in the audience, to realize, hey, something's wrong here. This is not right. So I never thought any more about it. So Sherm Egan, that was the guy's name. He was the guy that was producing the thing for CBS. So somehow or another, he calls me later that year because I'm in New York, and he says, "If you'd like to see the uncut version, the unedited version of this thing," he says, "meet me at CBS, and I'll let you watch it." So I contacted Wayne, his wife at the time, Karen, Chris Dickerson, and one of Chris's buddies. We went and watched the thing. And I didn't realize what a great difference it was until you're sitting watching the thing. And that's when it really was apparent, hey, something is wrong here. And they said, "This is it. We're not going back." So even though they paid the sanction fee for 1981, they never went back. And as far as I know, they've never filmed anything related to bodybuilding ever again.
So what was your opinion of the footage, Blair? What did you say when you saw it?
Well, I mean, it stuck out just as much as I had experienced. I mean, Arnold was by far not in his best shape. And as I said, two things I noticed that stood out in watching Arnold. He looked thin, okay, but he also looked unbelievably nervous. He was not confident. He's always been noted for being very, very confident in charge. He was not. Even with all the judges in his pocket, he was still unsure of how the crowd was going to react, and they did react quite negatively when they announced the results of the contest. But it didn't affect him. You know, he went on. I mean, you know, let's give him credit. I remember an instant Mike Mentzer telling me, and this was in 1981. He says, Arnold was in the Rose Cafe, which is right down the street from Gold's. And at the time, Mike's girlfriend happened to be in the Rose Cafe getting something to eat. And Arnold's telling him, he says, "Those bodybuilders think that they're going to boycott the Mr. Olympia." He said, "Before it's all over with," he said, "they're all going to be kissing my ass and they'll be in the contest." And he was right. And that's why I've always said the only people that I really think had credibility then was Mike Mentzer, Frank Zane, myself, and Albert Beckles, because we stood by our decision. We wasn't going to be part of it.
All right, our next interview is with Roy Callender, and Roy won the Mr. Universe at IFBB in 1977, and then he competed in his first Mr. Olympia the next year in 1978. And in 1980, he was there in Australia, and he was on stage, and he did very well. He was actually tied with Roger Walker for sixth place. Roy was a good friend of Arnold. He met him way back in 1967 when Arnold won his first NABBA Mr. Universe, and Roy was in that contest too. And so here's Roy's impression of the 1980 Mr. Olympia. You were in the Mr. Olympia in Sydney, Australia.
Not much to say. Not much to say.
Not much to say.
My God.
So you were in that show. Did you know beforehand that Arnold was going to compete in it?
Yeah. Of course. He told me.
Oh, he told you. Okay.
I can say that now.
Yeah.
He told me more likely than not I'll be there. So you should do this, and you should do this, and you should make sure you have this and that and the other. So if I'm not there, you still have to make sure that you're doing this and you're okay. So when we turned up to get on the flight for us to Sydney, mm-hmm. Arnold was there with Gold and a few other guys. And I said, So he's not going there. I said, so you're going to compete? He said, I don't know. Maybe I'll stay in the audience. Okay, Arnold, you just told me that you're going to go. Now you told me you don't know. Which is it? Yeah, seriously, right? I don't know. I think he was trying to size up the guys or get into their heads or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So we went backstage with Maria. When we got there, I remember he came into the dressing room. He said he's going to compete. So it was a decision made privately, I guess, even uh-huh. before he stepped on the plane.
Uh-huh.
And it was intended as a surprise. Keep everybody guessing.
Yeah.
So when he was in the dressing room, and I see him coming down the stairs with Maria. I said, okay, he's going to compete. He walked in the dressing room, went in the corner and started warming up.
Hmm.
And that I think that is what caused the arena to be filled.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sydney Opera House is not small.
Right, right. Hey, Roy, talk a little bit about that meeting also, the meeting where they had the with all the competitors, where they're talking about having two classes in the Mr. Olympia again or going to one class. And Arnold and Mike Mentzer got into it a little bit. You remember that?
You remember we said at the beginning of our conversation that when I first came into bodybuilding, there was no animosity?
Yeah.
I witnessed it firsthand there.
Mm-hmm.
You could feel it.
Yeah.
You feel it in the room, and that's not me.
Yeah.
I didn't like what I was feeling. Mike, he's not with us anymore, but he didn't particularly like Arnold's rhetoric a lot,
mm-hmm.
and he let it be known. I don't think Frank did either, because since Frank had beaten Arnold, they had become good friends, and Arnold liked when he was winning the three Olympias in a row, and then he made one mistake. Arnold just said to him in the interview, so Frank, what does it feel like to win your third Olympia? I would have said, man, it feels like heaven. I'd like to get to six, something like that.
Yeah.
Frank said to Arnold, it feels just like when I beat you in Florida.
Right.
You don't say those things.
Right, right.
And as I love Frank, you don't say those things. Don't say them to Aaron.
Right,
he
right.
He never forget. And they didn't speak since that day.
Really? Wow.
No. Since that day, they didn't speak. Hmm. And so then there was something also in Frank's mind about the Aaron competing, and that nobody said it's going to be fixed. Everybody thought, well, we're going to whoop him.
Yeah.
Not me, but other guys thought Mike thought he was going to beat him. Boyer thought he was going to beat him. Mm-hmm. Frank thought he was going to beat him.
Yeah.
We know how it turned out. It was a little bit embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But, and because it was filmed for ABC television, it never made the television.
Right, right. They never showed it. Yeah.
That was embarrassing. So yeah. The mission was accomplished. I don't know if it was to say to the guys, listen, I don't care what you say about me. I can come back and I can beat you in another shape. And we always have a big feast after. That feast was on a boat.
Uh-huh.
And the only people there were Tom Platz and myself.
Really? That was it? No one else?
Yes. But again, Tom Platz, my girlfriend at the time, and, I'm talking about from our community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The bodybuilding community was not well represented.
Wow, no kidding.
I think it's corny, man. But it wasn't well represented.
Yeah. So what did you think of Arnold's physique when you saw him get up on stage or when you saw him backstage pumping up?
I was scared.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he's going to get beaten. I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want that to happen. That's how I felt.
Hmm. Did you feel he was...
So in a way, I was glad it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And another way, I thought, this is not... You're going to take a black eye for this thing.
Uh-huh.
And we did. But I got scared. I like the guy, and we go way back.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always helped me, so I don't want this to happen. I didn't want this to happen. It's 20 years later, man. This guy is I don't want that to happen at all, but it happened.
Yeah.
And people still talk about it today. There's no need to talk about it. It was the judging panel, I thought, was not a very experienced one.
Mm-hmm.
But whether they were experienced or not, if they were told what to do and had to happen this way, fine.
Yeah.
But don't let us go there thinking you have a chance.
Yeah.
But then you can't. There's no other way to do it.
Yeah.
He was asked to come, and he was probably promised that if he comes, he will win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the promoter is still alive. The promoter's name was Paul Graham.
Yes. Yeah.
He was also the promoter when I won the Miss Universe, the Freshman Miss Universe.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a very sad day, but I think the sport has recovered somewhat, although the dynamics have changed.
Yeah.
Recovered somewhat from that.
Okay. So how did you feel your condition was, Roy? I thought you looked great in that show. I thought that was the best you ever looked up to that point.
Really?
Yeah, I thought you looked awesome.
I didn't think so. If you look at me, I look at myself. I said, you didn't even show it, Roy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so at all.
No? So you and Roger Walker tied, right? Didn't you guys have a special pose down? Because you guys were tied in the points or something?
Yes, we had to go back and have a special. I would have been grateful to be sixth. I still considered I was sixth.
Uh-huh.
But for the purposes of the competition, they had to break a tie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had no talk with Roger getting sixth because he had become Australian.
Yeah.
And it would have been good. So I was glad that he got it.
Yeah, okay. What did you think of some of the other guys in the show that night, like Boyer Coe and Frank Zane and Mike Mentzer and Chris Dickerson?
I only remember one thing, that's anger. Because I was backstage, see?
Yeah.
So I remember one thing, that's a whole room full of anger, man.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
That's why I said to you, it changed from a sport of real camaraderie to real, you don't need that in the dressing room.
Yeah.
But that is what it was, and that is what it had become in that day.
Hmm.
But look at it logically, 1 year later, it was forgotten, and even yours truly, I said no. Everybody forgot about it. Aaron came home, hosted the universe in Philadelphia, I think.
Yeah.
And time passed, time heals, but that one healed really fast because everybody turned up in Columbus the next year,
mm-hmm.
hoping to win, including yours truly. I went and trained like an animal for that day.
Yeah, yeah, I'll bet.
Same, but it cannot happen 2 years in a row.
Right.
Everybody was saying that. Can't happen. Right. Be back to normal. They're not Arnold.
All right, our next interview is with Roy Duval from England. Roy was competing, I think this was his first Mr. Olympia. Yeah, because he won the 1979 IFBB Mr. Universe, so he was eligible for the Mr. Olympia that year. And he was actually standing right next to Arnold Schwarzenegger in the lineup, and Boyer Coe was on the other side of him. So here's my interview with Roy Duval as he talks about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So did you know Arnold was going in it when you made the trip over there?
No.
Okay.
He first when I was a judge.
So. Okay. So, tell me about that meeting before the when Arnold all of a sudden showed up at the meeting and everybody knew he was going in it.
They knew he was going in it before the meeting. That's why the meeting was held.
Oh, okay.
Because before that, there were two weight categories.
Yeah.
In the Mr. Olympia, and some of the guys there felt that it would be an advantage to Arnold if there's two weight categories, because he's definitely going to win the heavyweight,
yeah.
No matter who's there. But if it's overall, it'll be more difficult. And where I have an overall, the best man should win.
Right, right.
So Adam's team to vote on. And we're all asked why we thought there should be Arnold or two classes.
Okay.
And the majority vote was that it should be one class.
Okay.
And that pissed Arnold off a bit.
Okay.
Because you see, the idea is had two classes, so the Franco could have been a class.
Mm-hmm.
Years before.
Right, right.
He was paid off.
Him and Mike Mentzer got into an argument then, that day?
Yeah, because Mike Mentzer's reason for voting for one class was that the year before, the only chance he had to be compared with Frank Zane was once in the absolute final.
Right.
And Arnold said, You didn't win because you had a fat belly.
Oh, I see. Okay. And that's when they got...
Mike went for him, and Bill Perr and Ben Weider got between him, and Ken Waller jumped up, Franco jumped up. And
really?
Chris Demichelino jumped up.
Wow.
Because, I don't know why, he doesn't like Franco, so... I thought, well, here we go.
It's going to be a big fight. You know? Right.
But it calmed down. It all calmed down.
Wow. So what were your thoughts on that show, right? Because I know today, even today, many years later, that's still one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias ever.
Well, Bill Poe was backstage, and he had wearing a tuxedo because he was supposed to have done the commentary. I think it was for ABC.
Okay.
Okay. And I said to him, why are you back here, Bill? I thought he was doing the commentary. And he said, I'm having nothing to do with this fiasco.
Hmm.
I said, oh. So he said, what do you think? I said, I think Arnold's going to be a little bit disappointed. He said, no, he isn't. And that's why I'm having nothing to do with it.
Hmm. So Bill knew that Arnold was going to win.
I had phone calls from Mike Mensah telling me that he had newspaper reports from Australia where a court case was going on between the people who were making Pumpkin Iron, whoever they were, I forget now, and ABC, because ABC had bought the film rights.
Okay.
And this company were there filming what was supposed to, or what was going to be, Pumpkin Iron 2.
Right.
And it came out in court that Paul Graham knew that Arnold was competing 7 months before.
Hmm. Okay. Hmm.
All right. And Mike said, I want you to boycott Arnold's show, anything Arnold does. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. You know.
He said this after the 1980 Mr. Olympia.
Yeah. And he never competed again after that.
Yeah, I know. That was his last contest, yeah.
Yeah, he was disgusted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you feel Arnold should have placed? Where would you have placed him, being up on stage with him and everything?
It's when you're on stage, you can't really see it the way the judges can.
But yeah, that's true.
Looking at people backstage, I thought that he was lucky to place higher than fifth.
Okay.
This is my opinion.
Yeah.
And I was an Arnold fan. I mean, like, I grew up in bodybuilding with Arnold sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when I was first started training, he was only 19, and he was second in the Mr. Universe, and you know, I grew up with him, and he was like me, like an idol sort of thing. I was quite sad to see him compete, looking the way he did, because he wasn't the old Arnold. In the photographs, he looked fantastic.
Yeah, he does look good in the photographs.
And the movie that was banned, he still made use of. He called it the Total Rebuild or something. So he still used the footage of it, so he earned money from it.
What did he look like in person, Paul? What was he lacking that we don't see in the photos?
What do you mean in Australia?
Yeah. When you saw him in Australia, you said in person he didn't look good, but
he looked much smaller, shall we say.
Okay.
But he still, in the photographs, he looks the biggest guy on stage.
Yeah.
Was really, I think the two biggest guys on stage was Dennis Tinarino and Roger Walker.
Yeah.
I think, personally, I thought Roger Walker was hard done by.
He was what?
Hard done by. I thought he should have placed higher than he did.
Okay. Yeah.
should have been done better. He looked very, very good.
What about Frank Zane? How did he look?
He looked incredible. He looked a little bit leaner, but he had an accident.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, he'd been in hospital, whatever. But condition-wise, he looked as though he'd been carved out of glass.
Really?
Yeah.
How about Chris Dickerson?
Chris Dickerson looked very, very good.
Yeah.
I felt if either Hoyer Coe, Mike Mensa, or Chris Dickerson, or even Frank Zane, if any of those four won, I don't think it could be disputed.
Right.
Like the difference between them must be less than 0.5%.
Really?
If anything.
Yeah.
So that was my opinion.
Yeah. Who would you have placed in first?
Hard to say.
Yeah.
I think, well, as good as Frank Zane was, I thought on that day, Mike Mensa and Boyer Coe were better. I wouldn't like to split the two.
Yeah.
I'd have a nightmare trying to judge that.
Yeah. All right, our next interview is with Chris Dickerson, and Chris Dickerson was in second place in the 1980 Mr. Olympia. He competed in his first Olympia the year before in 1979, where he took sixth, but then he went on a tear, and he was winning all the Grand Prix shows in 1980. So coming into the 1980 Olympia, I think that was the best shape Chris ever looked. So here is Chris's impression of how the 1980 Mr. Olympia went. You were in shape at every one of those shows throughout the year. And then when you got to the Olympia, which was in Sydney, Australia that year in 1980, you were in even better shape. You were, for that contest, I thought that was one of your best appearances ever. You were big, you were thick, you were ripped, your posing was right on point. So that was an amazing condition.
I think 1980 in Sydney, Australia, and I can say it was my best year.
Wow, okay.
82. But 80 was really, I look at my physique, I was a little more ripped in 82, but I didn't have quite the thickness.
Yeah.
And my body, and I thought, yeah, okay, good, Chris. But also in 1980, we'll never have another lineup like that one.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Look at those guys. So I was disappointed being second to Arnold, but I was so naive, I thought, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll come back.
Yeah.
People were furious. How could they do that?
Right.
And the Australian Association presented me with the winner's trophy. They came over on Qantas Airlines and met me at Gold's Gym and said, Chris Dickerson, Mr. Olympia 1980.
Was that?
Never talked about that because I respect Arnold and he was the official Mr. Olympia.
Right.
That is true. That holds true still today, of course.
Right. I want to ask you a little bit more about that show, Chris, because that was like 35 years ago now, and it's still one of the most talked about Mr. Olympias ever. But did you know that Arnold was getting ready for that show, or was that just a big surprise to everybody on the day of the contest?
I knew it, but I wasn't threatened by it because and especially when I saw him. And Arnold, don't get mad. But I sort of felt he's a good champion. And he's not ready for this. Look at him. And he was sweating. He was obviously up. He was nervous.
Yeah.
Had a lot to lose. And so, and I just looked at the other people and I thought, well, the guy who really, you know who I was afraid of? Not afraid of.
Yeah.
Little Danny Padilla
was
ready for that contest.
Really?
And others in on there were other people. I can't think of names now, but what a lineup that was.
Mike Mensur, Frank Zane.
Frank Zane, yeah. And he's like the outgoing champion. I mean, he's the current champion.
Right.
So I thought, well, I've got to be in here someplace. But I looked at these guys. And I believe, there was African American from Florida who was so good many times. He never won the AAU Mr. America. Many people felt he should have. Robbie Robinson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, these guys were... So I thought, okay. When I saw him, so when they called me for second, I said, oh, I guess Arnold won. But I wasn't upset. Other people were.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, heck, from sixth to second in 1 year, not bad.
Right.
What really upset me was the year after that in 81 when Franco won.
Now, in 80, Bill, Bill Pearl was...
And I accept that.
Bill Pearl was supposed to be a judge, right? And then he recused himself away from the judging panel because he had trained you for the contest.
Yes, well, he did out of fairness. And it was just preordained. The whole thing was pretty a setup. It was set up like a turkey shoot. I mean, no way I could have won that. Or anybody else but Arnold.
Yeah. Where would you have placed Arnold, Chris?
Honestly, about sixth, maybe.
Really? Yeah. It's funny that show is so crazy because when people look at pictures and stuff, a lot of people say, well, I see how Arnold should have won. But every time I talk to someone like yourself or Bill Pearl, or I just did an interview with Samir Banute, everybody who was there at the show said he should have placed about fifth or sixth.
Yes. But Arnold has a way about him that transcends his body. I have to give him credit.
Yeah.
Very charismatic, and he's so self-assured, at least during the competition.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about his being nervous backstage. Mm-hmm. He was noticeably nervous backstage. But
why do you say he was nervous, Chris? What was he doing? Just sweating? And
he was sweating a lot, profusely, toweling off, because he seemed in doubt, but had he known it was just decided that he'd win, but maybe he didn't know. I'm not sure. I can't say.
Yeah. Our next interview is with Frank Zane, three-time Mr. Olympia, and I had a chance to interview Frank just a few months ago this year in 2020. So I asked Frank about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. Now, Frank was the reigning Mr. Olympia going into the 1980 Olympia. He won the Olympia from 77 to 79. So he was the reigning champ, but he had an injury where he ripped his urethra open in this accident where the chair he was sitting on by the pool collapsed, and he fell into the pool, and he hit his urethra on the edge of the pool, and he cut himself. And it was a very serious injury. He was in the hospital for a long time, and he was unsure if he should go into the Olympia. So he talked to Arnold, who was always his advisor when he was winning the Olympia from 77 to 79. So here is what Frank had to say about the 1980 Mr. Olympia. In 1980, when you had that injury, you were looking really good too, right? Right before that injury, right, Frank? Weren't you even bigger than you were in 79?
I was like over 200 pounds, and if that didn't happen, I would have been in a great shape of my life. But, you know, I basically shouldn't have gone in that year.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital, and I talked to Arnold, and I said, Arnold, what do you think I should do? I said, I understand that you're going in. No, I'm just going to go over there and do commentary. I said, what do you think I should do? He says, well, you should go to Australia and defend your title. And so I did, you know, because I used to go to him for advice all the time when he wasn't competing.
Right.
And he'd tell me every little thing that needed to be improved. And so I sort of, you know, I relied on him, but, you know, he basically backstabbed me.
Mm-hmm.
Got me up. You know, and I guess he's just getting even, because in 1979, I'm walking off, you know, his coned hair and his tuxedo, and he says, Flake, does it feel to win Mr. Olympia for the third time? And I said, Arnold, it feels even better than when I beat you for Mr. Universe. And it made it on ABC. And
right.
He was so pissed off, he called me on the phone, and he's screaming at me.
Oh, really?
How could you, you know, talk against me, blah. I said, Arnold, you know, you have a great sense of humor when the joke's not on you. Just lighten up.
Right.
But that was it. That was it. He vowed to go and take me out, and he did the next year.
Well, so how did you feel that Arnold should have did in 1980? Because I've heard all kinds of stories about, you know, some people feel he should have won. A lot of people feel he should have won.
You know, whether or not I should have won, it's debatable. Because, you know, I had that accent. I wasn't at my best. I was very defined. But, you know, my face was like a death mask. Metzler looked good. I thought Boyer Cole looked really good. Arnold, geez, maybe fifth place.
Really?
I'd say maybe Boyer Cole, Metzler, me to win. Chris Dickerson next.
Yeah, I remember you made a good point. You were interviewed by a magazine back then, and you said when you only have 8 weeks to train, your strong points will come back. Like his biceps came back, his chest. But, you know, the triceps were weak, the legs were weak, right.
But he had what was it, 8 out of 9 judges in his pocket.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It all depends on the judges. You know, if you look down and you see those judges, if they look like you or they resemble you or you know them and you're friends, guess what? Probably going to vote for you. And that's the thing. A judge only votes what he's familiar with. Basically, they're looking for themselves and other people.
Mm,
when they look at you, they're looking for themselves. And if they resemble you, you got it. It doesn't bother me. I mean, it was just a great lesson.
Yeah. Now, do you wish you would have went in 81 when Franco won? Because that was back in Columbus.
I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
I wish I would have bowed out in 80 and went in 81 because I would have wiped
right.
them out.
Yeah. All right. Our next interview is with another Mr. Olympia, Samir Banute. Samir won the Mr. Olympia in 1983. So in 1980, he was competing in his very first Olympia because Samir also won the Mr. Universe in 1979. So he was eligible for the Mr. Olympia the next year. And he was not in top shape. He was holding a lot of water. But everybody knew this guy had great potential, and he eventually did win the Olympia 3 years later. But Samir was good friends with Arnold as well, and he saw him training at World's Gym leading up to the contest. So here is what Samir had to say about Arnold competing in the 1980 Mr. Olympia.
Let's talk about that 1980 Mr. Olympia, because that's still today, Samir, is probably one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias ever. So you go down to Australia to compete in that show. You didn't know that Arnold was competing in that, right, when you went down there?
No, I didn't know. I knew he was competing.
Oh, you did?
Because I was training along his side. I was training at World Gym, and I knew Arnold was going to compete.
Okay.
And he, in fact, listen, I'm being honest. I don't care. You know, if it's Arnold, I'll tell you. If not, I'll tell you. But Arnold prepared, and he looked really good 1 month before the show. I'm watching him. He looked really good. I felt like, wow.
Really?
Arnold, I'm not kidding. He was better. But what these guys don't understand, and Arnold, his own word, told me he had a major rotator cuff.
Okay.
Major problem. And he injected cortisone.
Yeah.
Because you really can't do much unless you take cortisone or not.
Yeah.
You know, so evidently, according to Arnold, it did backfire. And it made him retain tons of water.
Yeah.
So that's the complication that Arnold had. And really, I wasn't impressed with Arnold backstage in Sydney.
Hmm.
Hey, I know you asked me this question.
Yeah, I asked you before, I know. Let me ask you about that, the meeting of the day of the show when Arnold shows up and everybody realizes now he's competing. And there was a big argument between Arnold and Boyer Coe and then Arnold and Mike Mentzer. And is it true that Mike Mentzer and Arnold almost went at it?
Yes.
What happened there?
You see, Arnold, in my opinion, now getting to know him, he had a strategy because somebody pulled that strategy on me too, but that's another story. Arnold would do whatever it takes to mess up other contestants. You know what? Why not? More power to him.
Right.
He's not putting the gun in the hair or anything. He's just like,
yeah.
They were complaining about one class or two classes. And then Arnold told Mike, I said, why are you afraid? You this and that. Look at you. You let your belly hang. And so pulled out the mic. And the way he said that got Mike really pissed off. And so he knew how to get under the skin for the fact he wasn't really one to hurt him, but, you know, the verbal insult kind of get their adrenaline flowing. And so Arnold is sitting there right here. Ken Waller. I was sitting next to Waller and right. then Casey. So his best defense was nearby. So
what did, you know, Mentzer do? Mentzer went up to him and was pointing his finger at him, or what happened?
Yeah, Mike moved in like a raging bull.
Really? Wow. So it looked like it was going to be a fight.
Arnold got up, and then boom, before you know it, we all stopped. And
oh, really? Arnold got up?
Yeah, Arnold was sitting in a, you know, just, I think it was like a box. It wasn't even a chair, but.
Yeah.
He got up, but Mike started. Mike came in angry, and then we intercepted him in time.
Wow.
And yeah, then come Ben Weed, Oscar Fade, Bill Pro were there, Boy Peter, and so
yeah.
I'm down, calm him down.
Herman.
And I guess Arnold, he got what he wanted out of it, get everybody angry, get them all worked out.
Right.
He wasn't really ready, so he might as well let the other guy look bad.
Hey, so. What did Arnold say to you? I saw that picture where he's like sort of slapping your hand in the backstage. What was he saying to you?
He said, I don't know what these guys like complaining like a babies and right. I mean, what the hell's wrong with these guys? You don't have fun? Give me five. They're like, give them five because, you know, I was really, I knew I was going to compete with my idol.
Yeah.
And I'm going to. No matter what, I wasn't going to fight with Arnold. Or I mean, you know, I'm there having fun. My first Mr. Olympia.
Oh, he said that. He said that after all the fighting and or the after Mentzer came after him.
No, it was only like a couple minute thing and stopped.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it stopped, and you know, there was an intense atmosphere for sure, and then. Everything, everybody, guys had gone his separate way, and then was a prejudging later.
Yeah.
And, you know, I looked at the Arnold when he took his shirt off. I was really like, what? Isn't that the same guy I saw in Santa Monica?
Yeah.
He was really, he was depleted. And he had a layer. See, when you deplete, when you're not as full and you have subcutaneous fluid, because hormonal fluid is much worse than sodium fluid.
Right.
You have hormonal fluid that comes in like a sticky, like a glue, that's caused by cortisol or by aldosterone.
Right.
But the sodium fluid is different. Believe me, not everybody have the eyes for that.
Huh. Let's go back to 1980, Samir. When the prejudging started, and they're calling out Chris Dickerson, they're calling out Mike Mentzer, Boyer Coe. Roger Walker, and then they call out Arnold. How did you think it was all going to play out? Did you think Arnold was going to win, or did you think someone else was going to win? What did you think was going to happen?
Honestly, I didn't see Arnold winning. I didn't.
Okay.
I actually, that's the most, but Dickerson looked gnarly, Mentzer, Boyer looked good, but I think Boyer had a certain reason needed to be better. My opinion, but he was hard. I thought Dickerson, Mike Mentzer, and actually all the other guys, you know, Frank Zane,
yeah,
they were really all ahead of Arnold.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's interesting. It's interesting you say that because, you know, like people who weren't there, and now, what is it, 35 years later, they're looking at the pictures, they're looking at the video, and they think, oh, I think Arnold should have won. But it seems like everybody I talked to who was there, whether they were competing or they were watching it, almost everybody who was there thinks Arnold shouldn't have won.
I am Arnold's number one fan. I admire Arnold a lot.
Yeah.
Seriously. And if anyone wanted to win that night, that day, I would want Arnold or probably Zane. And I was a friend with Mike Mentzer.
Yeah.
But the truth must be told. Arnold was not in the top five. I would vote him out of the top five.
Okay.
I'm telling you, and I mean it.
Yeah.
Tell Arnold that.
Right.
This is the way it is.
Yeah.
God is perfect, buddy. We all have mistakes. We all are. We all can get in the hole sometimes. So, you know. But, you know, the thing is about Arnold, sometimes he says and he admits things. And, like, we'll talk to him about Sergio Oliva when he competed in Essex. He goes, Demir, when I went backstage, I saw Sergio, I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm going to beat this. Because Arnold won. He said he couldn't believe he won that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Just did it like that. You know, he's a true champion. He's not like about to.
Right.
But I guess whoever voted for Arnold to win, it could be like Paul Graham.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pinpoint, but did Arnold orchestrate that? Do I know that for sure? No. So I'm not going to point to Arnold.
Right, right. All right, our last interview of the Mr. Olympia competitors from 1980 is Roger Walker. Roger is originally from England, but he was living in Australia where the 1980 Mr. Olympia was held. And Roger had been in the Mr. Olympia for, I think, since 1977, and he had improved every year. 1980, he hit his peak. He was better than ever. He was bigger, real thick, good condition. And he had known Arnold for many years. He had seen him compete, I think, going all the way back to 1972. Because Roger had been in bodybuilding for a long time. And Roger's a great interview. He's very outspoken. He very tells it like it is. You can tell he's a man's man. He doesn't mince any words. So here is what Roger Walker had to say about Arnold Schwarzenegger and the 1980 Mr. Olympia. He was coming to Australia in 1980. When you heard that, did that really motivate you to train hard for that Olympia that year?
I didn't train any harder for the Sydney Olympia than I did any other.
Okay.
Because I knew it was going to be, I knew that was going to be harder for me than for the visitors.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the promoter and the president of the IFBB,
Paul Graham,
and myself got out a long, long time ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. That was Paul Graham, right? The promoter of the show?
Correct.
Yeah. When did you guys have a falling out?
I think early 79.
Oh, or the year before. Okay.
Early 79, maybe 78, we fell out.
Okay. Did you feel that was going to hurt your placing at the show?
Definitely.
Yeah.
But 80 wasn't as bad. 80 was a show, it wasn't a contest.
Uh-huh.
You understand the difference.
Right, right. So, did you know Arnold was going in it before the show?
Yes.
You did? How long before the show did you know?
A number of weeks.
Oh, really? Okay. Because a lot of the competitors were surprised that he was there and they didn't know. But you knew, being from Australia, you knew?
I'd heard in the grapevine, and it made sense that he would, mm-hmm. in light of the fact that Paul Graham was the promoter.
Okay. Because him and Arnold were friends?
More than friends.
Okay. did you feel that it had something to do with that movie, The Comeback? That's what I heard. I heard that they gave Paul the contest so he could do a movie that was going to be similar to Pumping Iron.
Have you read the article that was in Iron Brothers, Once Upon a Time in Australia?
I don't think so, no. Who wrote that?
It's anonymous.
Okay.
But you'd have to read that, and that would lay out the full details of what happened in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why, if I could go back to one of the points, Why on earth would Ben Weider give the Olympia to a convicted criminal from Australia?
Right.
Why would he give him his baby?
Right, right.
That's a question that begs. It was only the second time. The first time it was held in Germany. It was the first time out of America.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, Paul Graham, who is a convicted criminal, convicted of criminality in California, as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Why would Joe Weider, Ben Weider, present Arnold with a Paul with this gift?
Right.
Now, my other point is, who in their right mind could possibly believe that Arnold woke up one morning in sunny California and decided 8 weeks out, after 5 years in retirement,
mm-hmm.
that he was going to compete in an Olympia that at that scale he'd never competed in before.
Right.
This wasn't three people. two people.
Right.
A couple of people. This was 30-odd people, compulsory poses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
He'd never gone through these things.
Right, right.
Why would he put his reputation on the line 8 weeks out? Doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it does make sense if you believe that, obviously, Paul Graham knew that he would have the Olympia a year out. So I believe that as Paul was awarded the Olympia, it was ipso facto that Arnold was going to be awarded, not win, would be awarded the number one position.
Right.
It was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute no-brainer. So, I mean, the next year was just as interesting.
Yeah, I was at that one.
Where a guy with one leg won the contest.
Right.
I mean, it turned into vaudeville.
Yeah.
It was vaudeville. It was a joke. He insulted us. And then Arnold, apart from that, insulted us all by saying, I've done, in his accent, I won't even try to pull it off, I've done in 8 weeks what these guys have been doing, been training for 52 friggin' weeks.
Right.
Right? So, apart from that, he insulted us.
Yeah, yeah.
And my other point is I doubt very much whether Paul Graham actually paid him the prize money. Because there were some dynamics going on behind the scenes, and if you read that article, you'll see what. And I'm not going to tell you what they are now, because I could be sued.
Okay.
But when you read it, you'll see the facts. Lots of people know those facts and choose to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one guy on Facebook said, look, it's been a long time, 98 is a long time ago, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other night. I'm thinking, well, if I saw a guy with a watch, he was wearing his watch, and it was so precious and expensive that they only made one a year, that it was almost beyond money, and he was wearing it, and I knew he had stolen it, should I say, oh, nice watch? Or should I say, why are you wearing a stolen watch?
Mm-hmm.
Or what should I say?
Right.
What would you do? What would you say?
Say, why are you wearing a stolen watch?
So Arnold is wearing a stolen watch.
Mm-hmm.
Stolen.
Right, right.
He committed fraud with the help of all his friends.
Yeah.
And that is not sour grapes.
Right.
And that is not to say that I deserved any higher placing. I'm mm-hmm. just saying the most difficult part of that show, apart from fiddling Arnold's position, was what do they do with the Cordy Ballet? What do they do? How do they place the also-rans?
Mm-hmm.
And that was their biggest problem.
Right.
What should we do? Should we put Bane in there? What do we do? Oh, I guess. Let's pull a hat. Let's pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Right, okay. Right.
And what happened the second year was just as disgraceful.
Yeah.
So is there any need to check?
In 1980, when you guys were all getting ready to go out and you're pumping up and you looked at Arnold, what did you think? What did you think of his physique?
Not ready.
Not ready?
Not ready.
Not big enough or not cut enough or both?
Just not ready, not in contest shape.
Yeah.
I'd seen Arnold.
Right, you saw him at his best.
The first time I saw Arnold was in 72, and I thought, wow.
Yeah.
And that, I don't say that very often. Well, I didn't say that very often. But wow. But I didn't say that then. And he was human then.
Yeah.
Up to 74. 75 was a bit dodgy, but up to 74, he wasn't human.
Wow.
He was beyond the pack.
Wow, yeah.
He looked better than his pictures.
Yeah.
When you saw him in the flesh, he looked way better than his pictures.
Wow. That's amazing.
75. He was clever. But again, he managed to manipulate two people. Lou, who's and Serge Newbright, who, interestingly enough, actually won the world presidency that year. But the guy who was counting the votes managed to save Ben's backside.
Hmm. What did he win? What did Serge win?
Well, every year at the World Championships, the position of president, world president, was up for grabs.
Okay.
Up to 75. Serge was president of Europe and president of France, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he carried most of Europe. He carried the West Indies. And he carried a lot of the African countries. Frank Burrish was there when they voted. Certainly they won the vote. They actually won it.
Mm-hmm.
At the ballot. Who was counting the votes? Oscar Stoight.
Mm-hmm.
So Oscar Stoight recounted them. Ben won. Shortly after that, Ben was announced as president for life. They weren't going to have any more of this nonsense.
Right, right.
They didn't need to pretend that they were the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Right.
Forget about the democratic bit. Let's just be president for life, okay? So that's what he became. And, of course, Serge then got purged.
Right.
He was purged because they accused him of making blue movies.
Right.
Which was kind of cute.
Was that in 1975 that they did that?
That was in 75.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they kept him in limbo for a couple of days, stewing. And then finally said, oh, okay, you can enter the Olympia. Otherwise, it's just going to be Arnold and his little mate.
Yeah.
So he could make up the numbers. He did make up the numbers. But those two or three days have probably mentally disintegrated him.
Yeah.
And that was enough.
So why did they get him out? Just because he would have won that vote?
He did win,
yeah.
And Ben didn't want his baby, his IFBB, to get taken over by anybody else.
Right.
It was only meant to look like a democracy. It wasn't really supposed to be one in the way that it operated.
Right.
And it certainly isn't now, is it?
No.
No. Probably degraded even more.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Burrish was there at the time and became completely despondent in regard to what he saw. Because he believed that he'd actually joined an international organization that was fair dinkum, that was fair and square.
Right.
And very soon afterwards, he left in disgust and wanted no more to do with
him. Mm-hmm.
So, sad. Maybe a little nervous, but sad.
That's when Paul Graham took over then, after that.
Well, Paul sort of stole the presidency. Most of the bodybuilders in Australia voted him out of the National Federation. He rang Ben and cried on his shoulder and said, Ben, they've taken the IFBB off of me.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben patted him on the shoulder, reassured him it's okay, form another organization that's the only one that the IFBB will recognize, and they can all get stuff. And that's what he did.
Okay.
And we still have the same criminal in charge in Australia today, which is why we now have at least four different organizations, because nobody really wants anything to do with all that.
Okay.
And I don't want to come across as a whinging, whining person.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame.
Yeah. Let me take you back to 1980, because I heard when at the prejudging, I heard you and Arnold were sort of standing next to each other, trading elbows with each other during the mandatories.
I didn't take that as being aggressive.
Yeah.
I didn't take offense. It was just part of the, I'm in my light and I'm not moving.
Yeah.
You've been on stage, you know what it's like. You find the light.
Right.
You stay in the light. You don't walk away from that light.
Right.
And
you don't
give ground to someone else who wants to stand in your light.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's all that happened.
Okay.
It wasn't about to break out into violence.
Yeah.
Which would have been good for the show, but
yeah, no, that would have been great.
It was never going to be a violent thing. Just I wasn't giving way. Arnold wasn't giving way.
Right.
I didn't take offense. Okay.
Were you backstage when him and Mensah almost got into it?
I was right there.
Yeah. What happened there?
The meeting was going on quite smoothly. Everyone was deciding whether it was going to be two classes or one.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone decided that, yeah, why not one? Arnold wanted two classes because he already figured that he'd gone through the WWF playbook and decided that this is how he wanted to compete against a shorter guy at the fight. Because he was already going to be the tall guy, right?
Right.
He already decided. And out of the blue and out of context, he made some snidey and childish remark about Mike Mensah's guts.
Mm-hmm.
Mike took offense. Unfortunately, and this is the saddest part, unfortunately, he was stopped. Because I had ringside seats, and I thought, wow, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, that movie, The Clash of the Titans?
Yeah.
I thought, wow, it's going to be great. And I sit back, and I go, watch this bit. It's nothing like watching a good fight, right?
Right.
Enjoy it. Stand in the corner of a bar and just drink away quietly and watch them kick the living crap out of each other.
Right.
That's my thing, right? But unfortunately, it was stopped.
Yeah. Was Mensah ready to hit him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon he would have taken him out, too.
Yeah. Bill Pearl stopped him, right?
I think it was Ben.
Oh, Ben, yeah.
I think Ben stepped in.
Okay.
It was very, very funny. I was drawing the laughter. The funniest things I've ever seen. Because you know, bodybuilding contest, everyone's in great shape.
Right.
Lots of testosterone.
Right.
But it's all pent up. And you can't actually, well, you'd like to sometimes, sure. I mean, you'd like to smack someone.
Right.
But it's really aggressive.
Right.
But that's it. It's like sleeping with a woman without actually going there, right?
Right.
It's very frustrating because there is no physical thing to it apart from the posing, which is done properly.
Right. It
can be harder than people think.
Right.
It's actual head-on physical aggression.
Right.
That's why I thought this is great. Maybe that's just me.
What was the prejudging like? How was Arnold acting on stage? I heard like Bill Pearl said he was like the most aggressive competitor he ever saw.
He was doing exactly what he wanted. And Oscar State, who was supposed to be controlling the stage, was letting him get away with doing anything he wanted.
Right.
He was warned constantly, and warned about being disqualified. But, obviously, that was never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If I'd have done that, I would have been out of my ear.
Right, right. Who did you feel were the top competitors that year, as far as the condition of the athletes? Who did you feel was the top guys?
I think the top five, no, from two to eight. From two until eight.
Yeah.
That was about 2 to 8 was fair.
Yeah. Okay.
But then you make your own choices as far as the body type you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
As other people. So
right.
I'm not going to speculate on positions, but I'd say that take Arnold out because he wouldn't have made the eight. wouldn't have made the seven, right? So from 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Right? I think Dennis Tinerino was 8.
Yeah.
In there. Roy Callender was, I've seen Roy in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
In the 80. I think he was a little off. I think he was lucky to get that high.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, from 2 to 8, which should have been, would have been where the proper contest would have been.
So you wouldn't even have had Arnold in the top 8 then? Wow. Roger, what do you say?
I was standing next to him. I was looking right up close. I know what he looks like. And people try to fiddle on Facebook. They play around with photographs.
Right.
You photographs from the wrong year and say, this is, yeah, I mean, it's not, that wasn't 18. They pick and choose. He wasn't in shape. Simple as that.
Yeah. Sorry. I've talked to quite a few people who were at that contest. I talked to Bill Perl. I talked to Samir Benoud. I talked to Boyer Coe, Chris Dickerson. And everybody said Arnold was 5th or lower. And it's funny when you see, like you talked about Facebook, when you see the pictures or you hear the bodybuilding forums and people argue about it, the people that weren't there always say, well, he wasn't at his best, but I could see how he could win because he still looks better than everyone else. But everybody that was there said that he shouldn't have even placed in the top 5.
Well, no. With respect to Arnold, his best year was 74.
Right.
He was fortunate in 75. He should have left it with that.
Yeah.
There was no need. His movie career would have carried on just mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah.
What did he do? He made a laughing stock. The film crew that came over from America to film it put the film in the trash can.
Right.
It's never seen the light of day. It's been destroyed.
Right.
But they thought the bodybuilders were just a bunch of wankers and cheats, probably. They thought it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, he sullied, he besmirched the reputation of bodybuilding for his own ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that's what he did.
Yeah.
Stole the watch.
Yeah. So after the show was over, what was the feeling of the crowd and everything after it was announced, you know, that Arnold won and everybody placed where they placed?
Well, Arnold had never been booed before. Now in that movie, I think the booing, they dubbed out the booing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was that much booing that you couldn't hear him talking.
Wow, really?
They wouldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't stop. And even Arnold was, who wasn't expecting that booing, who thought he could pull this WWF thing off.
Yeah.
That, making it off the ropes, makes a comeback, and he's won again.
Yeah.
He looked decidedly embarrassed.
Hmm.
The booing wouldn't stop. The crowd didn't like it. And I would say, everybody in the room was booing.
Wow. No kidding. Everybody in the room.
Everybody in the house was booing.
Wow. No kidding.
Because it doesn't matter what country you're from, we can all smell bullshit.
Right. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. I also want to thank all you Patreon donors who help contribute to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast every month. And if you're interested in helping out and contributing to the show, just go to our website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link for the Patreon. So you can contribute as little as $5 a month. So if you'd like to do that, I appreciate you guys considering that. Next week, we will have Gerard Dante, who was a great amateur competitor in the 1980s and early 1990s when the competition was really tough. And then he went on to create his own supplement line, MHP. So we're going to have that interview coming up next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. All right, stay safe out there, everybody. Keep training hard if your gyms are open. And stay safe, stay healthy. And we will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.